Alright, so hopefully this will be our third, and for the most part, our final shiur on the topic of based in Shalzavla. So, in our first two shiurim, we kind of really fleshed out the chakira as to whether the based in Shalzavla is a regular based in that merely has a unique appointment method whereby the Ba'alei Dinim each appoint their dayan and then they together appoint a third. Is that merely a method of appointment to ensure that the litigants will abide by the based in's decision? Or is that reflective of a somewhat different type of beistin, a beistin that's somewhat more akin to pshara? So Ariel actually had a valuable clarification at the end of this year. When I say it's more akin to pshara, I only mean in certain senses. Now, we noted that pshara, in the cases of pshara, what you're really asking dayanim to do is engage in some kind of arbitration that is based on their own assessment of what is tzedek and yashar in the case, not based on the strict halachos of choshen mishpat. Whereas in zavla, we certainly are asking the dayanim to go to open up their choshen mishpats and deal with standard halachos of nezek, or not necessarily nezek, but hodos v'halvos and things like that that pertain in the case. What we mean when it's similar to pshar, I mean that its arbitration lacks the formality and the formal structure and stature of a normal basin. That was what we were dealing with, and we said that perhaps that's the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chacham and the Mishnah. We noted that that can actually potentially go either way. That was perhaps part of that chakira. We noted that this definitely seems to emerge from the discussion in the Rishonim about what does it mean when the Gemara says "Mitok shezebar loech of zebar loech yetzei din la'amito." And we suggested that it emerges from other sources as well. Perhaps the Bach's discussion of why the Mishnah says "Dinei Mamonos Peshlosha," why the tour begins by sharply contrasting Zavla and Pshara, and the like. So what I want to do for tonight is assess a number of nafkaminas. Now, as an introduction to setting up these nafkaminas, and I think I've said this in the past, and I'll say it again, if we want to be methodologically sound here, in each of these cases, we have to assess not only our chakira that we are interested in, not only our conceptual question, but the internal independent dynamics of each of the applications. So just by way of example, let's say you wanted to assess the topic of mitzvos tzrichos kavana or ein tzrichos kavana, right? The classic question that we have of whether or not you need intent when you perform mitzvos. And I come across sources that indicate that if I don't have kavana, then I'm not yotzei the mitzvah of kriyashma, right? So I can attempt to derive from that broad principles regarding mitzvos tzrichos kavana or ein tzrichos kavana, but I also have to assess the internal dynamics of mitzvahs kriyashma, because of the fact that mitzvahs kriyashma is all about being mekabel ol malchus shamayim, accepting the yoke of heaven. It may be that if you don't know what you're doing, you haven't internally performed the mitzvah, right? This relates to many other mitzvahs as well. There's like a famous taz on this about Bach, about specific mitzvahs where it says lama'an, right? Lama'an yedu'u darosechem kibasu kosav shabti es b'nei Yisrael. Right, an appropriate one on Isruchag. So there, the mitzvah we might say that, oh, if you're sitting in a sukkah, you need kavana, you need to know what you're doing. But is that because mitzvah tzrichos kavana generally, or because there's something internal to the dynamic of this particular mitzvah that dictates that kavana is necessary? And that's true across the board. Whenever you want to assess a chakira and nafkaminas, you have to look at the broad conceptual question as well as the internal dynamics of the applications. So just by way of example, let's actually start with the last issue that I have in these marmakomos, starting with source 25. Hanos Bechsav. So the question here pertains to whether, if I have a din Torah with someone else, can I, instead of making my case in front of Dayanim, simply write down all of my arguments, all of my Tainos Bechsav, and submit them to the judges to assess. So instead of making some kind of verbal or oral arguments, I'll just make a written argument instead. And will there be a difference between based in Shel Zeborer, Shel Zavla, versus regular Batei Din? So the Shulchan Aruch here, in source 25, is commenting in Choshen Mishpat Simen Yud Gimel Se'if Gimel. Simen Yud Gimel is all about Zavla. It's a very interesting context for this halacha. The halacha before this is going through the method of appointing a beistin of Zeborer, and when you can be chozer and when you can't. Another important halacha that we're going to discuss. All the halachos afterwards are also about Zeborer. Then right in the middle of this simen, the Shulchan Aruch says as follows, Ein kofen es ha'adam sheyitein ta'anosav b'chsav. You can't force someone to submit his arguments in writing. Ve'ein l'dayan l'kabel ta'anos b'chsav. And a judge should not accept written arguments. Ela yishme'u ta'anoseya mipihem, b'yitzavu l'sofer l'kosva. Rather, they should present oral arguments in front of the judges, and they should tell a scribe to transcribe all the arguments that are made. V'lo yichtavu ela midashneyem u'shneyem nosen tzchar ha'sofer. They only write these arguments with the consent of both parties, and the both parties contribute to the fee that is needed to pay the sofer. The Ramah, in source 26, comments as follows. Mihu, however, beis ba'al adinim rotzim leton b'chsav, harishos b'yadan. If both of them agree, if there's mutual consent to submit the arguments b'chsav, they have permission to do so. V'kol ma'asha kosvin, einin yichon lachsopem, whatever they write, they can't be chos. Okay? So the Shulchan Aruch says that they cannot submit arguments in writing. The Ramah says, if they both consent, they can. Now, is the Ramah merely qualifying the Shulchan Aruch, or is he arguing on the Shulchan Aruch? Not really entirely clear. The Gra seems to almost contradict himself on this issue. If you look in source 27, Mihu, classic Gra, two words, Cholek HaShulchan Aruch. Right? At the beginning of source 27, he says that the Ramah is disagreeing with the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch would maintain, the Mechaber would maintain, that even if you have consent of both Ba'alei Dinim to submit arguments in writing, they would not be allowed to do so.
So what does the Shulchan Aruch mean when it says Neim Kaifen? What does Kaifen imply that's one wants to do, one doesn't want to do?
Fair point. I guess his diuk would be from Ein L'dayan L'kabel Ta'anos Pechsav. I hear what you're saying. Again, I think the way the Gra would read it is as Ein Kofen Esa Adam. It's a fair point. The mashmaos of Ein Kofen would be that if there were consent, it would be okay. He would have to read Ve'ein L'dayan L'kabel Ta'anos Pesav, not as a qualification of the case of Ein Kofen, but as just a separate point, that a Dayan would not be allowed to be Mekabel Ta'anos Pesav, and that's why he would argue that it's Cholek HaShulchan Aruch. Now, it happens to be your reading emerges from the next point in the Gra. That's when the Gra is the Likut. You have to keep in mind that not many comments of the Gra were not written on the Shulchan Aruch. They were notes that were subsequently appended to the Shulchan Aruch. You have that in a lot of rabbinic writings. You have the essays of the Mishnah Melech, for example. Sometimes you'll read a Rambam, and the Mishnah Melech will go on for 10 pages. So part of the reason for that is that it wasn't written as a commentary on the Rambam. He wrote essays that his students attached to specific passages in the Rambam that featured prominently in those essays. So when it says Likut, it means that it's coming from, I think, a notebook that the Gra had that was again later appended to the Shulchan Aruch. And there, if you go to the end of the line, he says, commenting on the Rambah, Tanis Ratzu ve'in choshen shasheni yivad ta'anosa milibo v'havek kabluhu. They both want it. And then the important part for us, umasha kaza b'Shulchan Aruch ve'in l'dayin l'kabel mipiak sa'av afilu b'ratzon. So I guess they had he had a different, right, girsa here. That would actually explicate the point that we were just making, right? Afilu b'ratzon, hainu miratzon shalo b'ratzon shalzeh shakenegda. Right? It's only when one of them wants it, but not the other one. The clear implication in this piece being that what? If they both consented, then what would the Shulchan Aruch hold? He would hold, like the Ramah, that they would be allowed to, right? He says, when the Shulchan Aruch says you're not allowed to, it's only because one of them wanted to, but not both. Michal Hein at the Shomei Lav, or Michal Lav at the Shomei Hein, that if they both wanted to, here he's writing that the Shulchan Aruch would be allowed to. So you have two contradictory statements. Again, they were in different sources. The Gra could have learned it different ways at different times, and I don't know what he would have said. But certainly at the outset, the Gra is arguing that this is a machlokus between the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah.
Even from the lesson of the Shulchan Aruch, it doesn't seem that there's any the question is whether or not a taina written b'ksav is a valid taina. Right? It's not saying that because otherwise you wouldn't have said if the Shulchan Aruch truly felt that a taina written b'ksav is not a valid taina, it wouldn't have been a lesson of in kofen adam this and a dayan can't accept that.
Okay,
the whole concept is seemingly more of you could add in taina so the other person doesn't know about it.
Hold off 1 second. Yeah, we're gonna get into that. Yeah. Hold off 1 second. So 100%. Now, we're going to have to assess why it is that you can't do Tanos Pesav. We'll see that there are three deos that are going to relate directly to your point. So according to the Gra, we have a machlokas between the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah as to whether or not you can have Tanos Pesav. A separate question that we can raise is this specifically within the framework of Zavla, Or would this apply to any Beis Din? It is noteworthy that this seems to be a strange context for the Shulchan Aruch to be discussing this. Why specifically here would there be a discussion of Tainos Pesav when really the whole Siman is about the structure of a Beis Din Shel Zavla? Now, it's conceivable to say that perhaps the Shulchan Aruch thought specifically here, if we're working with the first interpretation of the Gra, where the Shulchan Aruch holds that it's not the case, even if they consent, you cannot submit Tainos Pesav. It's conceivable the reason why the Shulchan Aruch put it here is because perhaps, specifically in the case of Zavla, you would think that you can, because it's arbitration, because this is so much in the hands of the Baal Dinim to construct the rules governing this case. It's Kechomer Biyada Yotzer. They have the right to construct their own rules. Shulchan Aruch says no. The Ramah says yes. But then, obviously, if that's the case, we have to wonder whether the Ramah would say yes, specifically by Zavla, or across the board, right? So in order to assess this, as I mentioned before, we have to assess two things. Number one, we have to assess what is the nature of Zavla. That's our question. But we also have to assess the problems, the reasons why you would not be allowed to submit Tainos Pechsav. And here we have three reasons, two of which are quoted in the Sma, in Source 28, Sefkat Nyud Beis. V'ein l'dayan l'kabel. Hainuk shelo to'anu adayin ba'alpeh. Says, if they already submitted their claims orally and then they want to write something up, that would be okay. But if they didn't, they can't only submit their tainos in writing. V'harivash. He quotes the rivash. Amu b'tziyunim osir alef. Nosan ta'am l'dvarav sham. What is the reason for this? L'fi she'ein l'hatriach chaveiro. L'kachas tofes ta'anosav. U'l'hashav alayin mitoch aksav. It's not fair to be matriach somebody else. You write this amicus, right? That's 100 pages long. And it's not fair to make another person sift through all of your legal writing for 100 pages and go through it with a fine-tooth comb to assess all of your legal arguments and dispute every single thing that you put in writing. It's not fair. Ein la hatriach. Certainly in a time when not everybody was literate, that wouldn't be fair. But in general, it's hard to go through somebody's, again, a lengthy legal argument. Now, if that would be the case, well, let's actually finish what the Sma says. The Od, he gives a second reason. Sheyesh l'dayanim l'shmoa hata'anos bipiyam. The dayanim themselves should hear the claims from the litigants themselves, should hear it directly from the mouths of the ba'alei dinim. To mitoch divrayan yilmadu lohavin mihatoin emes o hasheker. Because sometimes when you listen to somebody, you can tell whether they're telling the truth or not, right? It's easier to obfuscate meaning, and it's either easier to be ambiguous, it's easier to hide your true emotions, right? Sometimes people just have certain nervous tics when they're lying and the like. It's easier to assess whether or not someone is telling the truth if you actually hear them speaking, rather than you hear their arguments. And you shouldn't have something that's organized by somebody else to make your tainos. Those are the two reasons given by the Rivash. Now, as it happens, those two reasons may account for the dual language of the Shulchan Aruch. Ein kofin, because you can't be matriach, somebody else to do it, right? And two, ein ladayon lekabel, because it's inappropriate for him to accept the arguments if he can't hear what they're saying in order to assess who's telling the truth and who is not. Now, if we were to come to the machlokes between the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, we can argue that really the machlokas perhaps pertains to which of these arguments is really the primary reason why you can't accept Tainos Pesav. If it's that I can't be matriach, somebody else to go through the writings and to read my entire brief and determine what he disagrees with and the like, then if we both consent to it, would there be any reason why we can't do it? No, of course not. If the whole reason is I can't be matriach, somebody else, then if we both consent, then it should be perfectly fine. On the flip side, if the issue is that the Dayanim need to hear us in order to determine who's telling the truth and who isn't, then it's likely that even if we consent, the Dayanim still can't accept that agreed decision on our part, because it still cripples them. It still inhibits their ability to decide who is indeed correct in this case. So it's conceivable that Shulchan Aruch would hold that the reason why you can't accept Tainos Pesav is because in la hatriach eschavero, you can't bother somebody else. They both agree fine. The Ramah holds the primary reason why you can't accept Tainos Pesav is because the judges have to be able to assess who's telling the truth and who isn't. And if that were the case, there would presumably be no difference between a Beis Din Shel Zavla and a regular Beis Din. It's all about being matriach somebody else. Then even in a real Beis Din structure, as long as they agree, there's no tircha, and it should be fine. Across the board, there should be no distinction whatsoever between Beis Din Shel Zavla and a regular Beis Din. If the issue is that the Dayanim can't tell who's telling the truth, then again, it shouldn't matter. Even in a Beis Din Shel Zavla, where it's more of an arbitration, the Dayanim still need to have the ability to assess who's telling the truth and who's lying. So if this is a machlokas about the nature of Tainos Mipiaksav, then it really bears no, potentially, has no relevance to our topic. However, it's important to note that there is a third opinion as to why you can't submit Tainos Pesach. There's a Talmud HaRamban, Masechta Sanhedrin. Unfortunately, I didn't reproduce it because they don't have it on Bar Ilan. But the Talmud HaRamban on our daf, on Sanhedrin Daf of Gimel, says the problem of Tainos Pesach is the problem of Mipihem Velo Mipi Turgamon. Now that is something that the Gemara applies to Eidos. Gemara says, Mipihem Velo Mipi Ksava, Mipihem Velo Mipi Turgamon, right? Which raises the whole sugya, the major, both large and significant sugya of Shtaros, Hedru Shtaros work, if we have this principle that Eidos can only be delivered mipihem below mipiksavam. But the Talmud Ramban says that should apply to Tainos in Beis Din as well. It's an important chita. It may relate to the stature of Tainos in Beis Din. Are Tainos in Beis Din just things that Beis Din, that the Baal Edinim, that the litigants make claims against each other that really just lay the framework for us to make a decision? Or do they have a certain chalos? Is there a chalos taina that that registers in Beis Din? That may relate to other questions about, like, about toin v'chozer v'toin, which is a sugya in Cheskas Abate, or the machlokas between Chachmei Ashkenaz and Chachmei Sfarad about modeh b'mikzas ha'taina. It's a famous line in the Gemara B'Metzian, Daf Gimel. I think some of us saw this together with the version song. Rav asks, why is it that that a modeh b'mikzas has to take a shvua? There's a big machlokas between the Balei Tosfos and the Rimi Gash and the Chachmei Sfarad as to whether the question is why do they need to take a shvua? They shouldn't have to. Or the Chachmei Sfarad interpret it, why do they only have to take a shvua by modeh b'mikzas? They should even have to take a shvua d'oraisa by kofar bakol. That's the way the Rimi Gash interprets it. So if you take that approach, that implies that merely leveling a taina has a certain halachic force. It can trigger the havaminas that would be able to trigger a shvua d'oraisa. So the Talmud Ramban's application is interesting. But if we accept the Talmud Ramban's application, mipiyam lo mipi turgamon, then whether or not that would apply to a Beis Din Shel Zavla could be a critical question about the nature and structure of this entire Beis Din. In other words, let's say, both, again, this is theoretical. We don't know exactly what the Shulchan Aruch and Rama think the problem is behind, or the potential problem is behind Tainos Pesach. But if it were the problem of the Ramban, then we would say as follows. If Zavla is a regular Beis Din and works through a regular Beis Din structure, then all of the regular laws governing how a procedure of Beis Din should be conducted should apply to Zavla as well. And if there's generally halacha of mipiyam v'lo mipi turgamon, that should apply to Zavla. On the flip side, if Zavla is an arbitration and lacks all the formalities of a formal Beis Din structure, then we can claim that even if generally there is halacha mipiyam v'lo mipi turgamon in front of a formal Beis Din, perhaps in the context of arbitration, where Tainos don't have that same formal halachic status, they would be able to submit their Tainos Pesach. So, if you adopt a certain approach to Tainos Pesach, this is something that could have major ramifications for how we understand Beis Din Shel Zavla. On the flip side, if you interpret it through other ways, again, this is where the internal dynamics of Tainos Pesach comes in, if we interpret it through the lens of the two issues in the Rimi Gash, it would have no bearing on our issue whatsoever. So it's a good example of where, if you adopt a certain approach, it will be a valuable nafkamina for our question, but if you adopt other approaches within Tainos Shel Pesach, it wouldn't have any bearing on our question whatsoever. Okay? That's one example. Another example that I didn't put in the Mar Mekomos is there's a discussion in the Achronim about the mitzvah of Elohim lo sekalel, or Elohim lo sekalel. It's machlokes in the Gemara about how to read the Pasuk. Is it Elohim lo sekalel referring to Dayanim, or Elohim lo sekalel Hashem, but with ramifications for Dayanim as well? So, is there an Isser of Losa Kalel by judges of Zavla, by the Dayanim who are appointed in a case of Zebor Elohecha. Discussion in the Achronim, two deos. So on the one hand, that could again be a question pertaining to the nature of these Dayanim. Exactly our question. If they are invested with the formal stature and status of real judges, then we'll say that there should be an Isra of Losa Kalel. If they are just there for arbitration, then perhaps we should say there is no Losa Kalel. That would seem to make sense, right? But once again, you have to assess the internal dynamics of Elohim Losa Kalel. It's quite conceivable that Losa Kalel, based on the sugya there, is really about the formal structure of Batei Din. That you can't really like buck the system. It's almost like challenging the authority of Torah by cursing out Dayanim, who are the standard Dayanim who are established b'chol plach v'plach, b'chol ir v'ir, b'chol medino medina, right? We know we have a mitzvah of shoftim v'shotrim t'ten l'chol b'chol sharecha. There's a mitzvah to establish Dayanim. And if you curse those Dayanim who are the established Dayanim of a particular city, of a particular region, of Klal Yisrael, then that is a statement about your disdain for the system, for the hierarchy of the Torah court system. That might be the Isra of Losa Kalel. If that were the case, then you can claim that even if the Dayanei Zavla have full stature as Dayanim, there still will be no Isra Losa Kalel simply by virtue of the fact that they are an ad hoc basin as opposed to one of the established Batei Din as part of the judicial hierarchy. So once again, it could be a nafkamina, but you have to assess the internal dynamics of the Isra Losa Kalel to determine whether or not it indeed is. It's quite conceivable that even if they are a real Beis Din, there still will be no Isra Losa Kalel based on the internal dynamics of that particular Isra. Okay? So let's see a couple of the other Nachkamina that emerge, both from the Gemara itself and from the Rishonim and the Poskim. So let's turn we'll skip number item 4. Let's turn to item 5, source 13, Rashi and Sanhedrin Daf Gimel Aleph. We noted that when the Gemara begins its discussion of Zebor Elohechad, the Gemara is unsure what exactly that line means. The line's somewhat ambiguous. It just says Echad, it doesn't say what Echad refers to. Now the Gemara offers a number of Havaminas as to what it actually refers to. So at the beginning, Rashi, we worked with Rashi's interpretation, and Rashi said Zebor Elohechad, this is source 13, Mashma, Zebor lo basin echad shehin shlosha. Reuven appoints one basin of three dayanim. Veze echad, hare shisha. Shimon appoints another basin, so you have six. Ushnehen borin lohen od echad, hare tisha. And the two of them come together to appoint a third basin. So how many judges do you have in the end of the day sitting to judge this case? You have nine. V'hainu dekamatama, mai zeborer habitos asagi. This is why the Gemara asks, why do you need Zeborer? Three should be sufficient. That's Rashi's Girsa in the Gemara, that's our Girsa in the Gemara as well. But many of the Rishonim don't like the way Rashi interprets this Havamina. Source 14 is Tosfos. Mai Zebor Loech v'Zebor Loechad. Pirsha Kuntres. Rashi says, the Mashver Lehavu Teisha. That you should have nine judges. Ketzad. Zebor Lo Beis Tenechad Harei Gimel. Zebor Lo Beis Tenechad Harei Shisho. Shnehen Borin Lohan Beis Ten Acher Harei Teisha. And he goes through the mechanics like Rashi said. Ulahaki matama betlasasagi. Underline. Velonahira. I don't think that is actually the original Hava Amina of the Gemara. Shari mashma osalashon enokain. Because this is not really the implication of the language of the Gemara. Tosas are asking not a conceptual question here, but a textual question. To imkain, because if this were really the Hava Amina of the Gemara, Havale lahakshos pehedya hagufa kasha resha azeva, then the Gemara should have asked a very obvious question. That beyond the question that it asks, it should have asked, you have an explicit contradiction within the Mishnah itself. The beginning of the Mishnah, the first line of the Mishnah, contradicts the subsequent lines in the Mishnah. Amrit, Dine Mamonus Bishlosha, the very first line of our Mishnah is, you require three judges for Dine Mamonos, for monetary cases, Alma Begimel Sagi. We see that three is enough. V'hadarka Amrit Tzaratisha. It shouldn't have just said Betlasa Sagi. It should have said, what do you mean? You have an explicit contradiction within two lines of the Mishnah. So Tosos pose a textual kasha on Rashi. How do Tosos interpret the Havamina? V'nirali, the af mitchila hayodeya kamosha mefarish achar kaksh, zeh posel beis in shachaveru, zeh posel beis in shachaveru. V'lo yeshvu kiyem gimel achronim. Tosafot say that really this Hava Amina is like the second Hava Amina in the Gemara. It's really the same, where we assert that each one appoints his own Beis Din, and then each one disqualifies the Beis Din that the other person appoints, and together they choose a third Beis Din. So it's not that you have nine judges sitting on the court. One person appoints three, they're disqualified. The other person appoints three, they're disqualified. And together they choose a final three. So really, Tosa say that the original question is really just a question on the language, that because the language implies that you're obligated to do this, that this is it's a procedural issue, this is the procedure that you follow. And if really each one is disqualifying the other person's Beis Din, there's no reason why that would be a necessary procedure. That's just, if it happens that way, this is how you should act, this is the path that you should follow. But not that it's a procedural requirement. So Tosas interpret the Hava Amina as identical to the second Hava Amina in the Gemara. Tosas Arash is a different, slightly different approach in source 15, Zebra Lo Echad. Again, Pirsh Rashi, Beis Din Echad Shem Gimel, Shtem Borin Lan, Od Echad, Od Beis Din Echad, I'm sorry, Hari Tisha. Now his kasha is a little different, and his approach to the Hava Amina is a little different. Because how could the Gemara have made a mistake to think that we would need nine Dayanim? Now, it's not entirely clear what his question is. That's all he says. It's conceivable that the question is identical to the question of Tosfos. It's a textual question. How could you have thought, possibly misinterpreted this Mishnah to think that you need nine judges? The very first line in the Mishnah is Dine Momenus Mishlosha. It is conceivable that the question is the same as Tosfos' question. But, given the fact that Tosfos Rush doesn't phrase it as a textual issue the way Tosfos does, right? Tosfos, from the very beginning, highlight that it's a textual issue. They say, Mashma'us Haloshon Eino Kain. Tosfos Rush does not say that. Tosfos Rush does not point to the stira between the Reisha and the Seifa. It's conceivable that Tosfos Rush is just asking a conceptual question. Why would we ever think that you need nine judges on the case? Lo Matzinu. Right? We have all sorts of different numbers in the first Mishnah in Maseches Sanhedrin, but for Dine Momenus, you don't need nine. Why, where would this number nine come from? Then he poses a different textual question from the Gemara. He says, really, the first Hava Amina is like the ultimate Maskana, that each one appoints his own Dayan. And then he goes through the Shaka Patari, he says, originally it thought that, and then it thought that it couldn't be, and then in the end, we circle back to our first Hava Amina. So there are really three ways of reading that first Hava Amina. According to Rashi, the Hava Amina is that you need nine Dayanim. According to Tosfos, the Hava Amina is identical to the second Hava Amina in the Gemara, that each one appoints his own Beis Din and they're disqualified. And according to Tosfos Rashi, the first Hava Amina is really identical to the Maskana. We originally reject it, and then we come back around to it. What's more interesting to me is this Kasha on Rashi. Why in the world would we ever think that you require nine? Can you have nine? If you so choose. So here we have an important source in the Ramban, source 16. Ramban is commenting on the first parak of Maseches Tevarim. Famous pasuk that we know because of the tune of Eicha. Eicha esal levadi, torcha achem umasa achem v'rivchem. Moshe Rabbeinu asks the Jewish people how he could possibly bear the burden of judging them on his own. And Rashi quotes a medrash, source 16. Loshon Rashi misifrei, torcha achem. Rashi quotes the medrash that says, "What does torcha achem refer to?" Melamish hayu torchanim. They were difficult. Haya echad mehem roe espa aldino notzeach bedin. One of them would see that the other person had the upper hand, that he was winning the case. Omer, yesh li edim lahavi, yesh li rayos lahavi. Mosif ani aleichem dayanim. I have more proofs, I have more witnesses, I'm going to add more judges to the court. Ve'adin hazeh, lo yodati oso. Oh, so now the Ramban comments. I'm sorry, it's just very hard to read with the... our toner issues. Hopefully for our next Mayim Makomos, we'll have our printer issues resolved. Says, I'm not familiar with this halacha. That a baldin could just come along and decide that he can add more judges in the context of Dine Momenos. It's surprising to me that this institution can exist at all. And now you're telling me that not only can he add more dayanim, but he can actually wait it out to see how the case is going, and then decide to add more dayanim. The Ramban makes a comment here, which is a comment that it makes certain assumptions, so we'll leave it out for a moment. We'll see that the Ramban here is consistent with his commentary on Sechs B'Metzia, which we'll see in a moment. But he says, where do we find this notion that you could just add more dayanim if the dayanim are kshirim? The Ramban says, underline, Shema nilmo mikan, perhaps we see from here, sheyachol adam lomar, shnei dayanin ani borer li, v'tivror atah shnayim achirim, v'hem yivaru od echad. Instead of going through the normal structure of Beis Din, where I appoint one, and you appoint one, and together they appoint a third, perhaps we could say, I'll appoint two, and you appoint two, and they appoint a third. V'hei adin nigmar b'chamisha o'b'yoser, k'mo sh'omer in adomar din anigmar b'hei, l'din anigmar b'yud. Perhaps we just want more dayanim because we're tzedek tzedek tirdof. We want to make sure that we end up with the right conclusion, with the right psak. So we figure the more minds, the more rabbinic minds together, the better. And we both agree, I'm going to appoint seven and you appoint seven, and then together they'll appoint one and we'll have a court of 15 dayanim. I'll appoint 33 and you appoint 33, and together they'll appoint one, whatever number we want. We can just fabricate a number and we can together create however many dayanim that we want. And then the Ramban says, "Afal pi shegemara kopen l'adam b'fneihem, shegimel kopen l'adam b'fneihem." Even though three people can force others to be judged in front of them, that's only the Ramban qualifies. B'she'ina rotsa l'kabel alav l'adam, avo rotsa livro yoser korer. Have like Omar neilech l'mkom avad. Okay, we'll leave out that line also because that's also an important line. But any quotes that said this tirdof, perhaps you're going to want a better based in, so you can appoint as many as you want. Now, it's interesting. The Ramban is bothered by the fact that you can add more dayanim. So he says it must be a case of what? It must be a case of zebore. Now, why did the Ramban jump to a case of zebore? It's conceivable that he did that for two reasons. One is just a technical reason. Look, we know that the appointment process happens to the Ba'al Edinim, and they can appoint as many as they want. The alternative would be that the Ramban here is making a statement about the nature of based on Shalzav law. Why is it specifically conceivable here that you can construct as many dayanim as you want? Because in the context of formal Dinei Torah, the first Mishnah and the first Perek of Masechet Sanhedrin gives us specific numbers that you need in order to judge any particular case or whatever, or not even judging certain cases. For all sorts of different halachic institutions, you need a specific number of dayanim, and Dine Mamonos is on that list. But once we're within the realm of Zeborer, when it's arbitration, of course they can choose however many they want. So since people, the Ramban is making a statement, and once we say that, I'm not saying this answers the Havamina of the Gemara, but perhaps at least gives us a forum to understand where Rashi was coming from. It doesn't explain why we would need specifically nine. Right? Why nine? If it's arbitration, it could be 9, it could be 15, it could be 21, it could be 27, it could be any number that you want. It doesn't explain why 9. But it would at least get us out of the problem that emerges from the first parakam, the first Mishnah in the first parakam of Masechet Sanhedrin. You're telling me 9? 9 is not a number that we find anywhere in the context of Dinei Mamonos. Perhaps the Havamina was, this is fully arbitration. Insofar as it's arbitration, you want it to actually be different from regular Dinei Mamonos. You want more Dayanim. And therefore, you're allowed to appoint more, or you're expected to even appoint more, not going further than the Ramban, that you're allowed to appoint more. Perhaps the Havamina of the Gemara was that you're actually expected to appoint more. That we reject. But are you at least allowed to appoint more? The Ramban says yes. An even more shocking position about the number of Dayanim in the case of Zeborer comes from the Ramah again in Siman Yud Gimel Seif Aleph. This is source 17. Again, the Shulchan Aruch is just quoting the regular halachos. He's starting the siman with all the halachos of Zeborer. And then the Ramah says something rather shocking, in the name of the Ma'arivaya. We'll just read the underline. We don't have to read the entire Ramah. He, I think he does, if I remember correctly, quote the Ramban somewhere. I don't know if it's here. He quotes the Ramban right afterwards. But before he quotes the Ramban, in the underlined section, he says as follows, according to Marivayel, V'mashnayim ha-boririm yecholim. Does anybody have a clear... V'mashnayim ha-boririm yecholim lehashvos atzman. Oh, that's a good one. Thank you. Yesh onrim de'ein tzrichim levar shlishi. He says, if the first two can come to a consensus on what the halacha should be, they don't even have to appoint a third. Now that is a much bigger chiddush, presumably, at face value, than saying you can appoint more. If you can appoint more, okay, at least you've surpassed your requirements. We know that there are certain cases, even in Dinei Mamonos, where you'll have more than three dayanim. In cases of Eni Odeya, which we'll see if we have time to explore, you end up adding more dayanim. It's one thing to take your case to a larger base than is required. But then to tell me that you don't even need three, that's a much bigger chiddush. Now what does that imply? Again, certainly this works well. The implication of the Rambam may be, once again, that Zavla is a form of arbitration. If they can both come to the same conclusion, there's no point in undergoing the formality of hiring a third person just so that he can argue and that the psak will be maintained nonetheless. If you're talking about a formal basis structure, then yes, I understand why you need to fill that structure, why you need the three dayanim. If it's about arbitration, if we know what the psak is going to be in advance, then there's no point in undergoing that strict formality of appointing a third dayan. Just stick with the psak that we know to be true. If this were a formal basis, then the Rama would never be able to say what he's saying, at least presumably. I heard from my Rebbe, from Rosenzweig, Rosenzweig wanted to argue that it's conceivable, it's at least possible, the Rama can even work within the framework of a formal based instruction. And he argued that this pertains to the sugya of Shnayim Shadon. There's a big discussion in the first paragraph of Sanhedrin about the status of a based in Shel Shnayim. Do they fundamentally work? Do they not fundamentally work? And in the end, we say that you need a third Dayan because we don't want a based in Shakul. We don't want to have a based in that is evenly balanced, that can't be machriya, that can't properly decide a case on the basis of Rov. So, Rosenzweig wanted to make the argument, I think Yakir would probably be able to discuss this better than I would. You were in Shir last year, right? Were you in Shir last year? Right, so I was in Shir for most of last year, I was only there for Kaitzman. Rosenzweig wanted to argue that perhaps the whole notion of based in Shakul is to ensure that there is potential for disparity among the basin. You don't want too much kirvos da'as on the basin. You want to make sure that there is at least potential, at least, or perhaps you wanted to argue at least in the masa umatan stage of basin, when they're discussing the case, you want there to be a disparity of opinions, and you want to avoid having two people who are too closely aligned in their thinking that would remove the basin's ability to explore all of its potential options. Perhaps in the context of Zeborer, he argued, let me just flesh out the argument, perhaps in the context of Zeborer, where the Dayanim themselves come in with intent to dispute the case, with they both come in with the with opposite perspectives on the case and opposite arguments they are intended to make. Again, this goes back to the issue that we discussed in terms of Kadesh Yetzi Adin La'amito and the Rush. Or the Rush. Again. Right, the Rush didn't go as far as Tosfos. He said that each one is intended to flesh out. Tosfos left it ambiguous. But yes, the first day in Tosfos, the Lofum Rieta, that each one is making the case for his for their respective Baal Dinim. But the way the Rush argued it, that each one is exploring that Baal Din's, the merits of his case, and then they both discuss it together, right? Perhaps in a case where they are coming in as adversaries, we don't have to worry about the standard issues of based in Shakul that pertain to the issue of kirvos das that might exist between the dayanim, because of the fact that they're dafka coming in as adversaries in terms of their perspectives on the case. In that case specifically, we would allow them to judge by themselves if they can agree. In general, if two dayanim agree, we don't like that. We want more diversity of opinion. In this case, where they're coming in with the perspective of diversifying the opinions, their goal is to provide a diversity of opinion. If even those diverse opinions can agree, perhaps that removes the problem of based in Shakul. So once again, you can argue that it is a nafka mina about question, or based on the internal dynamics of based in Shakul and Shnayim Shadanu, you can argue that it pertains to that issue also. Is that
My question is more just related to that explanation of Rabbis and Shaka.
Right, you want the diversity of opinion. You don't want Kirvos Das.
No, but what I'm saying is, so then once you hit four, if three was okay, then four is just, why, what's wrong with four?
Fair point. I think you would probably say that you also want the ability to be Machria.
Then once you have that, then what do you need the first answer for?
What do you need the first... I heard this Mahalach from Rosenzweig. I did not hear all of his rios and arguments as to why a Beis and Shakel should pertain to that particular issue. I assume that he had many. I think that's a safe assumption. But again, I wasn't there for the first parak. I was only there for the third parak. But that would remove it as an afkamina of our case. Just a couple of other quick hits to see in terms of afkamina of our question. In addition to the structure of how many dayanim you need, there are questions about will there be discrepancies between Zavla and regular Batei Din in terms of who qualifies to serve as a Dayan Kosher? Who's a Kosher Dayan? Source 18, Pesachei Tshuva. Dayan Betshuvas, Adoni Avi Zikni. Who is Adoni Avi Zikni? It was the Panim Iros, right? I think, is that correct? Any history of... I think so. Shekasav, De'azra Api Adin, Lahaktim Ta'anos of Tchilo Lifnei Aborir. You cannot be makdim your tainos in front of one of the borerim. The kavachomer de usher lifsok lo schar b'shvila zakoso b'din. Pretty remarkable. Kol shekain, it's crazy that you'd even entertain such a havamina. There is a long discussion in the Ksos about whether that psul is, when you bribe a judge, is that a psul de reis or a derabanan? Is that nogeya? Is it not nogeya? Hopefully we'll see that when we do the sugya of nogeya be'edos. But it's almost inconceivable that would be a havamina. But the Piskei Tshuva is telling you, watch out for this. Kizad lor borechad v'zavla, critical line, kol toras dayanim aleihem. So he's clearly taking a stance on this issue. He's saying, kol toras dayanim aleihem, they are full dayanim to the fullest extent. You can't change the procedure here or the kashas dayanim here from any way you would, any of the standards, you can't lower any of the standards that we would have by standard dayanim. Teherech sham betochachas, megula al kilkul ador b'inyan zeh. Any engages, he says, look at the Panim Iros, who has a Harif Musar for our generation, who apparently were not particularly keen on observing those halachos. Apparently they were buying off judges. So again, the Piskei Tshuva's standpoint is called Torah's Dayanim Aleihem, the regular Dayanim, so you can't do these things. Now, even if you said that Zavla is arbitration, is it likely that you would say that you can't bribe them? Yeah, I think so. I think most people would agree, except perhaps those Toim B'Divrei Rashi that the Rasha excoriates, right? I don't think anybody would say that even if it's arbitration, you could just buy off the person who's supposed to be arbitrating the case. What about being Makdim Ta'anos of Tchila? There, we could have made a much stronger case, particularly if we adopt, again, the Rasha's approach to Yesei Adin La'amito, that each judge is supposed to discuss the merits of his particular Baal Din's case. It would actually make a lot of sense to say that they could be Makdim Ta'anos of. Right, so that they fully understand them. This may also relate to the problem of Makdim Ta'anosa. Is it that it prefers an unfair? Is it what exactly is the problem there? Is it that it provides an unfair advantage because you're making your case independently? Is it that it will bias the judge towards your case if the other person is not there to contradict what you're saying? If it's about bias, then again, once again, even if it's about arbitration, I could make a strong case to say it would still be usher lahaktim ta'anosav in front of one of the Baal Dinim. You're still giving him an unfair bias towards your case. And even if we adopt the approach of the Rush, that he's supposed to explore all of the merits that you have towards your case, he's still supposed to decide ultimately based on emes la'amito. And if you're implanting some kind of unfair bias, I could have argued that even if it's arbitration, it should be usher. But the Prima Gadim's argument, the Piskei Tshuva's argument, is that these things should be prohibited. Why? Because kol toras dayanim aleihem, they are judges to the fullest extent, and our standards should not be compromised in any way whatsoever. Similar discussion appears in the Tshuvas of Maharik, Sof Simit HaZayin. Avok shezeh borer lo echad avuro, chena acher borer lo echad avuro, afilu shezeh borer ohavo, gam ha'acher yivror ohavo, v'yisbarer adin api adayin ashlishi, hashavir l'shneihem. He says, what can you do here that Maharik is arguing on the Piskei Tshuva and saying that here you are allowed to be Mevarer, a Dayan Ohavo. That's generally a psul. You can't appoint somebody who is in open Ohev, right? If that's clear that you have some kind of Kirvos Das, if you're Yedidei Nefesh, then you can't appoint that person to be your judge. The Ma'arik says, in the case of Zavla, it's mutter to do that. And then he adds another line, Va'afilu misho midas chasidus ein kan. And there isn't even a midas chasidus to avoid such a thing. Etc. The point that he's making is that here, the whole point is that they're going to make the case for you. So again, if they are ohavim, he's arguing, it's not even a midas chasidus to avoid them. That's in a certain sense, they are the perfect dayanim for Zavla. Would the Pesachei Tshuva agree with that? Obviously not. He would say, Kol Toras dayanim aleihem, and he would dispute that case. And once again, I could have certainly made a case that even if it is arbitration, Ohavim should be psulim. The Ma'arik is arguing that Ohavim are ksherim, we change our standards for not only the number of dayanim, but also for the standards of kashrus for dayanim on the basis of the fact that this is a different kind of beis din. The Pesachei Tshuva adamantly disagrees. The next nafamina I want to discuss, and we'll only do two more, so hopefully we'll get in at least one more tonight, and maybe we'll just finish up the last one very quickly at the beginning of next year, is the question of Chazara al Brei Rasa. So we saw that there's a machlokas in the Mishnah about my ability to disqualify the other person's chosen dayan, right? With Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim arguing about the standards of that need to be in place for my ability to do that. Do I need to provide proof that they are psulim, or can I simply choose to disqualify the other person's dayan? But what about if I want to be chozer on my own appointment? I appointed someone, I have regrets, I think I could have done better, and now I want to retract my appointment and appoint someone else. So this becomes a discussion in the Gemara Bava Metzia. The Mishnah Bava Metzia, source 20, says as follows. The context of the Gemara is a discussion about somebody who finds a shtar in a public area. To whom do you return it? Now that is a very recent Daf Yomi material, right? That is a very important question for the following reason. Let's say Reuven lends Shimon $100, right? And Shimon writes Reuven a shtar, indicating that that's the case, that Shimon owes Reuven $100. And you find, now, as long as Reuven holds that shtar, he has the ability to claim money from Shimon, right? Once Shimon pays, what must Shimon do? He must make sure to take that shtar from Reuven and either tear it up or at least make sure that Reuven does not hold it, right? If Reuven does hold it and Shimon claims, I already paid you, is he believed? He is not believed on the basis of a principle called shtar chab yadi mabai. I'm holding your shtar. If it's true that you paid me back, you should have taken the shtar from me, you should have torn it up, you should have disposed of it somehow. It shouldn't still be in my hand. You can't claim that you paid me if I'm holding the shtar. That defeats the entire purpose of the shtar in the first place, right? If you've aided him that you paid, that's a different story. But you can't just claim that you paid. That defeats the whole purpose of a shtar. So now we have a critical question. I find the shtar in the shuk that says Reuven lent Shimon money. If I return it to Reuven, then Reuven is potentially extracting money from Shimon when Shimon already paid. If really it was Shimon, if Shimon took the shtar back from Reuven already because he paid, then and I returned the shtar to Reuven, then Reuven now has the ability to extort money from Shimon that Shimon doesn't really owe him. If, on the other hand, Reuven was the owner of the shtar, and I give it to Shimon, then Shimon's getting out of paying entirely. So you have this big question and discussion in the Gemara Bava Metzia about returning certain shtars that are found in public areas. So the Gemara says, Matza igros shum, the igros mazon, shtari chalitza umiyunin, hold all sorts of different types of shtaros, assessments, and mazon, and chalitza, and miyun, right? Different shtarim asserting that a chalitza was performed, or miyun, we're not going to get into all that stuff right now. Ushtare beirurin v'chol maisa beistin, hareza yachzer. And shtare beirurin, and any maisa beistin, you return the shtaros. The Gemara asks, my shtare beirurin, what is this term of a shtar? Some interpret it to mean shtari tainasa. In other words, we noted before that the sofer transcribes the oral arguments of the Ba'alei Dinim and writes them down. So they are the documents that record the arguments presented by the Ba'alei Dinim. Rabbi Yirmiyah Amar Zebor Elohechav Zebor Elohechav. Rabbi Yirmiyah says, what are shtari berurin? Zebor Elohechav Zebor Elohechav. And what does it mean, Zevor Elohecha, Zevor Elohecha? Rashi. Oh, sorry. I didn't provide Rashi here. That was a mistake on my part. Rashi explains what Zevor Elohecha means is that it is a shtar recording who I appointed. If I appointed Dayan Ploni, you'll have a shtar recording that I appointed Dayan Ploni. Here, I didn't provide Rashi because it's quoted in the Ramban. Let's take a look at verse 21. Rebimer Amar Zevor Elohecha, Zevor Elohecha. Pierce Rashi Zal. Shelo Yuchlu Lachzor Bahem. It records that I appointed Dion X, that you appointed Dion Y, and once that is recorded, neither of us has the ability to retract our appointment and appoint somebody else. Nirash Akash Akasvishtar Berurin ain't Echad Mehem Yachalachzor Bo. It appears as if once they write these shtaros, once they are composed, they no longer have the ability to retract their appointment. However, Va'ad Shelo Kasvu Yucholim Lachzor Bahem. The Ramban says the clear implication is that if the shtar was not written, they would be able to be chozer. The Chayniker. He says that appears to be the case. She'im lo kein, lama kosvin? Because if that weren't the case, then why would they write these in the first place? We're not concerned that he's going to forget who he appointed. He says also, why would we need the consent of both of them to write these shtaros? If they're able to be chozer afterwards, then, or if they weren't able to be chozer before, then there's nothing at stake. Why would we need a mutual consent to write these shtaros? If the point is that they were able to be chozer beforehand, and then after they write them, they're not able to be chozer, then we understand why you need mutual consent. So we have this basic concept called shtarei berurin, which records which dayan was appointed by each of the Ba'alei Dinim, and that is what removes my ability to retract my appointment. Now the Rishonim debate the following question. What about a case where those Shtarei Beruran were never written? We never composed them. At that point, when am I allowed to be chosen? Here the Ramban records two deos, and there's a third dea in the Rosh. Rabbeinu HaGadol Zal, this is source 21, the first underline, because of B'tshuva, according to Riff, the Rif records in a tshuva, Shemisha bar lo dayan lo dun lo, yesh lor lachzor bo, ad sheyigmar hadin. A remarkable shita of the Rif, who says, until when can I be chozer? As long as that shtar has not been written, I can be chozer until the point when the dayan says, ploni ata zakai, ploni ata chayev. Till that very last moment, I have the ability to retract my appointment. I see the case is not going my way, retract. Torchachem umasa achem v'rivchem. Right? Similar to what the Ramban was saying. But you're not just adding Dayanim, you could actually retract your appointment of the Dayan you appointed originally. And the Ramban qualifies, Mashma the Hanimila de Lokas for Shtari Beruhin. Avalkivan Shah Piv Kasu Havele command the Kanumi Neva Inu Yachalasabak to Kasivna. He says, that's only in a case where they didn't write those Shtarim. He says, I think the Rif would agree with me that if they wrote those Shtaros, then they would no longer be able to be Chozer. But as long as they haven't written them, they could be Chozer until the very last moment. However, v'ikamanda amar, there's another daya, says the Ramban, misha to'anu bifneihem, avat bishlo kasvu lokanu eno chozer. When is the cutoff point? From the end of the Tainos. They made their claims, they handed over to the Beis Din in order to begin the process of what we know as masa umaton. The judges are going to discuss what the case is, or who's right in the case. And at that point, when you finish your Tainos, you can no longer be chozer. And Yerushalmi says it depends on how many you accepted in front of. That, again, that's something that we'll hold off on because that might pertain to a different Nuschaos later in the Gemara Sanhedrin. The Rush presents a third daya. Look at verse 22. We'll just pick it up from the underline because it's running late. He says, oh, let's take it from the beginning because it's short. Right, we said that the sofer records their arguments that they shouldn't change them. It's recording each dayan that's appointed. The Rush says, till what point can they be chozer? Until the point when they started their tainos. Even the second day on the Ramban was not that strict. The second day, Ramban says, Misha ta'anu b'fnehem. Once they finish their tainos, once they hand it over, then they can't be chozer. The Rush says, Bochelo is chilu l'ton. As soon as they start, they can't hand it over. So what's going on here? So I think this issue very much highlights our central hakir about Zippor. If you say that Zeborer is a regular based in, there's a unique method of appointment, but it has all the stature of based in, all the koach of based in, a regular chalos based in, it's a regular based in. Is it even conceivable that the Rif says that you could be chozer on your appointment until the psak based in? It's inconceivable. You walk into a based in, you lay out your tainas, you hand it over to the masa umata, and you see that things aren't going your way, and then you're just chozer and you drop out of the case? That's nearly inconceivable. I don't think there's any way to argue that according to the Rif, this is like a full formal based in. Now, if it's arbitration, then you can at least understand what the Rif is saying. It's still a chiddush. I still could have very much claimed that you'd adopt any of the earlier points. But I can at least claim that that is the reason why you'd be able to be chozer until the last minute, because ultimately, if it's arbitration, the entire koach of the dayanim in this case is the consent of the ba'al edinim. It's the consent of, just like, you know, consent of the governed, it's the consent of the litigants in the case. That is the only reason why you'd be able to issue a psak. And if they're chozer, then even if it's before the right before the final psak, they have the right to do so. What about the difference between eschilu liton versus misha to'anu? So I think that can pertain to two interesting stages of the Basin case. According to the Rush, it says that it's chizchilu leton. What we might say there is, what is Zeborer? Zeborer ultimately is a method of appointment. So as long as they're involved in the appointment process, who has the power? The Ba'al Edinim. As soon as the case begins, that is when it is transformed into what? Into a formal Basin procedure. Because that is when it is transformed into a formal Basin procedure, they no longer have the ability to be chosen. So that makes a lot of sense. What about the middle day of the Ramban? I think the middle day of the Ramban perhaps fits that same paradigm, but almost perfectly. What is the Ramban saying? Until the Tainos are completed, every Din Torah is in the hands of whom? The Ba'al Edinim. That is when they are still active players in the case. As long as the Tainos are still being made. Once the Tainos are finished, that's the point when the case is handed over from the Ba'al Edinim to the Dayanim. At that point, the Ramban says, so Zavla, perhaps maybe it is a little bit different. At the stage of Tainos, for the Rush, it's only at the stage of Minui, at the stage of appointment, that it's in the hands of the Ba'al Edinim. Once the Tainos are ready to start, it's a full Din Torah. For the Ramban, as long as the Tainos are still going on as well, it's still within the hands of the Ba'al Edinim, it's still the ability to be Chozer. It's only once it's handed over to the Dayanim for the Masa Umatan and the final Psak Din, that's when you can't be Chozer. For the Rif, you have the entire time until the Psak Din itself, because that is clearly some form of arbitration. But this Chazara issue is certainly, I think, whereas many of the other ones really, and this in truth, this one too, as we'll see when we get to the Sugya of Kabbalah Psulim, can pertain to certain internal dynamics, but certainly highlights the general Chakira of whether this is like an arbitration or formal based. So just to very quickly summarize what we saw 5 or 6 nafkaminas tonight of our central question, each one qualified by the internal dynamics of the particular application. We started with the question of Tainos Mipiaksav. We saw 3 reasons why you can't give Tainos Mipiaksav and the ramifications that had for our case. We saw the question of Elohim Los Kalel, whether that applies to Dayanim of Zavla. We saw the number of Dayanim, both having more in the Ramban and fewer in the Ramah. We saw the Havamin of Rashi as well. We saw the question of Kashrus HaDayanim, the Pesachei Tshuva and the Maharik, on Ohavim, versus other cases like even bribing the Dayanim or laying out your Tainos in advance. And then finally we saw the question of whether or not you're able to be Chozer on your own appointment, retract, and hire somebody, and appoint somebody new. So maybe next time we'll just go through one final nafkamina that I think can resolve a seeming stira in the Shulchan Aruch, about the case of Eni Odeya, and then we'll move on to our next sugya.